Good morning. I get to read our scripture today. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making my prayer with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. And I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. It is right for me to feel this way about you all, because I hold you in my heart. For you are all partakers with me of grace, both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel. For God is my witness how I yearn for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. It is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and praise of God.
Thanks, Shelley. Well, we are on week two of our series going through the book of Philippians, this letter that Paul and Timothy write to a church that is doing well spiritually, even if they aren't doing so well with their circumstances around them. And that seems to mirror a bit of what we see going on with what Paul is going through as well. We're told in verse 7, which I'm not sure if I've been given control of slides yet, but we're told in verse 7 about Paul's imprisonment. And that might remind us of the story that we told last week of Paul's imprisonment in the planting of the church in Philippi. That as he was beginning the gospel going to this city, as he was helping them follow after Jesus for the first time, well, one of the things that happened was that he was imprisoned during that time. That's not the imprisonment that Paul is talking about here, though. This is a different one. Even though he is imprisoned here in verse 7, we're told of this is a different imprisonment that he is going through. Paul just can't seem to stay out of jail for Jesus. Now, we'll talk more about this next week, but it's worth noting that even despite the fact that Paul is in jail for the gospel, his response is not lamenting his circumstances. In fact, it's not even focused on himself all that much at all. Instead, what we see in verse 3 is that he is full of gratitude. He begins this section by talking about how he thanks God for what is happening right now. Now, this isn't incredibly surprising for Paul if we know anything about him. Paul just seems to go on and on about thanking God for all these different things. In fact, this phrasing, giving thanks, that verb that's used, it shows up about 54 times in the New Testament. 37 of them come from Paul. He just seems to give thanks for all different things. What is he thankful for in this passage? Well, it kind of just is everything. Paul is the king of gratitude. But as I was reading the passage for this morning, what was really interesting to me is how many different time markers Paul seems to use in this passage. He looks back on his previous history with this church, what he knows to be true of them in the past. He's reporting on what he knows to be true of this church currently, what's going on right now. And he's looking forward to what is certain, to what is yet to come. In other words, Paul has gratitude for what God has done, what God is doing, and what God will do. We'll break that down in the passage. First, we'll start with what God has done. And in verse 5, we said that he gives thanks for your partnership that he talks about. In verse 5, he says your partnership in the gospel from the first day. So looking back from the first day. When Paul thinks about this church that's in Philippi, well, he thanks them for how they've joined in with him in ministry. Now we say this all the time. Whenever the Bible is talking about the church and the people who are doing the work of the church, it's not thinking of some expert Christians, some sort of professional, like the perfect ones, as if there were such a thing. But what the Bible talks about is those who are joining in the work of the ministry, the impact of the gospel, that is done by the church together. Those who are brought to a church are together, are part of that church, are also part of the work of that church. And this church in Philippi has embraced that. This isn't Paul's church, it's God's. And all those who believe in God, God is the one who works through them to enact his work in that church. But Paul as well might have in mind a specific way that they have partnered with him in this. I know we're jumping ahead in the book, but in Philippians 4, he talks a little bit more about this. He says, "Yet it was kind of you to share in my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me." In what way? Well, in the giving and receiving, except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. See, this word shows up again here in this passage, and he notes that they have partnered with him in giving. Paul's ministry of the gospel has a financial need to it, and this church has enabled the gospel to go out to new places because of their financial partnership. I mean, just as ministry here cannot happen without the partnership of those who call Calvary Bible Church their home. That because of the generosity and the giving and joining in the partnership of this church, it enables everything from the lights being able to be turned on to replacing microphones when we need a new one. Or even this is the first week that kids ministry has taken over the entire hallway. They have outgrown the space that we gave to them, including adding in there a mom's room, a mother's room. I think that's the terminology we've gone with. But enabled to equip that. I saw Dakota putting together furniture for that today. Or even just the gospel going to places for the first time. All the work that happens here, all that God does here, well, that's only possible because of the generosity who are here, who are part of this church. In the similar way, your faithfulness is a cause for similar gratitude. For without your partnership, this church could not be. But finally, I think Paul has in mind another piece that he is grateful for in this partnership. So ministry is shared. It's something that the church does together. Ministry is supported. It's off of the generosity of the church. Well, ministry as well, and we're all wondering what's the third S word going to be. It's shared, it's supported. And that's right, ministry is relational. That what Paul is talking about here, the work that God calls people to do, well, it can be hard, as it has been for Paul. Ministry can be isolating. Again, Paul is literally in jail for the gospel. And it's so easy to become discouraged. It's so easy for all the feedback to just be negative feedback, or to just hear of what should or must be done differently, or what should or must be done that's just more, or, you know, someone else could be doing this better than you. And yet when Paul thinks of this church, he has only experienced a partnership. I think that word matters here. It's not just talking about that they're doing it together, but they've joined in fellowship, community. They are actually together, relationally so. Paul has not been left alone. He has this church. Even though he may have been removed from them physically, he knows that he has a partner in them, friends in them. Ministry needs these relationships. Well, the other reason that Paul talks about in this passage for why he has gratitude for what God has done previously in the church is back in verse 6, for that God began a good work in them. That God began, so previously, in the past, God began this work in them. Yes, God has saved them, but he hasn't just saved them and left them to be on their own, but he is working more and more in them to make them more and more like his son. That he's impacting their character, what they're like. Paul says it's obvious God has done this work in you in the past because this shows up in who you are, in how you are living. But Paul is not just grateful for what God has done previously, but for what God is doing even now. And here, we're going to do something really crazy. I know some of you come with multiple colors every single week and people laugh at you like, why are you doing that? That's ridiculous. Well, now you get to prove them wrong because we're switching from yellow to look at what God is currently doing now. Because what we see in this passage is that Paul is grateful for what God is currently doing now. And he says that here, their partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, that it's even ongoing to this point. Paul sees them sharing in the work God is doing, supporting it, relating with him in the work God continues to do in this church. But then verses 7 and 8 make the shift fully into what God is presently doing in this church. Paul talks about his love for them, that he holds them in his heart. that he yearns for them with all the affection of Christ Jesus. So it's talking about his great love for this church. Well, why is that? Well, it's because they are, present tense, partakers of him with grace. That's this joining together, this knowing God is working through them, knowing that God has brought them together in this way, and that continues to this day. That Paul looks around and knows, I know you're right there with me. I know you're here. And that makes me so grateful for what God is currently doing in this church. Paul, who would otherwise feel completely alone, forgotten in a jail cell. Paul, who would otherwise feel like he's wasting his time because he's not doing the work that God called him to do. Paul, who could otherwise feel ignored or misunderstood or utterly consumed by his awful, awful circumstances, but is instead so full of love, so full of gratitude, not because of the power of positivity or wishful thinking, but because he looks around and sees genuine good ongoing. Good in the form of being able to recognize God is currently at work. Good that comes because of having others in his life. Good that comes from knowing that good is being done to others. That is sufficient. That is enough to make him grateful in what would be otherwise horrible circumstances. One more place of gratitude, and therefore, one more color for us. And then we'll try to understand it for ourselves. So Paul is grateful for what God will do. There was a hint of this back in verse 6, where it talked about how God, who began this good work in you, will bring it, will, in the future, bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. So he's grateful that this church is now living out of their saving, now becoming more and more like Jesus, but knows that this will be accomplished. This is a lifelong venture until Jesus returns and makes all things new and right and good. But his gratefulness is not just the prospect of, you know, someday things will be good, but it's certain. It's rooted. It's not just hoping, but he knows that this will be the case. Even though Paul has enough reasons right around him, as he just looks at what is ongoing in his life, he has enough reasons to be grateful. He cannot help but look at what the perfection that is coming that's certain. That's what enables him to look around and see all that's broken and know that they will be restored. That's what allows him to endure the things that are faded and in the dark around him, because he knows all things will be brought into the life. That's what allows him to sit there in a jail cell, because he knows all who taste imprisonment will one day be set free. But then really, to drive this point home, Paul shifts his entire focus on the work that God has started that he will bring to completion. The work that's ongoing, evident right now in the life of this church, that God will make will all the more produce. It's just a taste of the final work that God will produce. And we see this in verses 9 through 11. It says that their love may abound more and more. So continue to do this in the future so that they could pursue after things that God is doing this work into them, so that they may in the future approve what is excellent, to go after what is good for them rather than what is just fluff or what would otherwise cause them to go adrift. And the end result that will be produced in them is that they would be pure and blameless, filled with the fruit of righteousness. Paul rejoices at the end of this passage, knowing that God is at work in this church, and what God sets out to do, he will always complete. Looking all the more certainty that this will be a certain end result for this church, because God has already started doing this. The goodness, the beauty, and joy that is present in this church right now is just a glimmer of the extent of the work that God is doing in them. And that makes him grateful. Paul has so much gratitude for what God has done, is doing, and will do. But do not miss the ultimate reason for that gratitude. It's not, I know my circumstances will change. It's not, I know tomorrow will be better for me than it was today. It is entirely focused on what God is doing in the lives of others. It's not his removal of hardship, but when he sees what is good and beautiful and true about these other Christians, the evidence of the work that is going on in their life, that's what causes him to feel gratitude, even with his circumstances, do not. I mean, how easy is it for us to react with envy when things are hard for us, but we know that they're going well for someone else? I mean, how much do we take it as almost like an attack when we are going through a really difficult time and someone else is talking about how things are going well for them? Or even just the fact of when we think of the things that we're grateful for, does our mind immediately jump to the things that fit within the confines of my own life? Or is it equally as shared with the delight and joy that we have for what is going on in the lives of others? When Paul looks at what's going on in this church, he's such an example for us to see that even when my circumstances don't change, there is so much that we can be grateful for because God has, is, and will always be working, especially in the lives of others. Well, how is it that we get to that point? If we're talking about how Paul is this example for us of gratitude, how do we do this? Maybe he's just particularly disposed in this way. I mean, we say he uses this phrasing more than anyone else. Maybe he's just better at it than we will be. And I don't think that's the case. I think from the wording of this passage and even just the frequency that he is giving thanks, I think it's something that's practiced for him. I think it's something that he grows in, which gives me so much hope because it's something I need to be growing in. So how is it that we grow in gratitude in this way? Well, look back at verses 3-6. When he talks about how he thanks God, he does so first through his remembrance. As he's thinking, as he's drawing to mind those other people that God has put into his life, when he thinks about others, that is reminding him of the partnership that he has with others, the fellowship, the community, that it's reminding him that he's thinking back on it. This active practice of, I want to sit down and remember. I don't want to miss this. I want to recall. I want to think back again on what God is doing in the lives of others. That's what allows him to be thankful. To remember, God has not left me alone. To remember, God has not made all of the church rest upon me. To remember that God has not left everything that happens in this world up to what's going on currently for me. But there is good, there's beauty, there's delight, there's joy surrounding me whenever other people are. It's in remembering that that allows him to be thankful. And remembering is an active word. This isn't just, let's see what happens. He takes the time to remember what is going on, and that's what causes him to be grateful. The second way he practices this is he's talked about always in every prayer. That it's in praying for others that he grows in this gratitude. I mean, one of the greatest ways that we can grow in affection for others, in appreciation and joy for others is by praying over them. I mean, how much harder is it to grow resentful? How much harder is it to continue to be selfish when our prayer life consists of, God, help them. God, I know that they're lacking this thing. Please give it to them. God, I know that they're going through difficulty. Please be with them in the midst of it. If that's the language that we're doing, that has a way of shaping and softening our hearts. But more than anything, what allows Paul in this section to always be grateful is by remembering the very character of God. He goes to God first. By remembering what God starts, he finishes. By remembering that God does not leave everything up to individuals, but calls a people to himself. By remembering the very nature and character of God that he's forming all Christians to be like. By looking at who God is and what he's like. By recalling the very fact that God always will be working. There is never a time that he's not. That's what allows him to have gratitude, even when his circumstances would otherwise push him in the opposite direction. So here is the challenge I want to leave us with. I love this church. It has been so helpful in helping me follow after Jesus, and I know it's helped others to do the same. And yet, I know that every single one of us can grow in gratitude in this way, both in our understanding of how do we relate to God, how do we relate to the world around us, but especially, and I say especially, to be practicing this on when things are going well for us to enable us to make it through those times that are not. As we practice gratitude when things are going relatively well for us, that's what helps us to go through the days when our circumstances might look like Paul's or this church in Philippi. When this becomes our pattern, when we're training our heart in this way, that is what helps carry us through the days that are difficult. See, there's a trend, and like a lot of trends, it starts from a very good place. Before, there was this mentality of you have to pretend things are better than they are. You show up at church, you better look perfect. like make your life look like it's all put together, have no problems whatsoever. This is a place for perfection, so you better be perfect. And that was bad. Hear me say that. That was not a good mentality. Birthed out of that was a belief that's kind of gets summarized by this phrase. Maybe you've heard it before. It's okay to not be okay. And that's a really good thing. That the church is a place that is for people who recognize our need of other things. That it's not for performing, but it's relating to a God. And that should be true of this church. That should be true of every church. But like a lot of things, it seems like we've moved from that phrase to something entirely different. Rather than it being, it's okay to not be okay, it's almost taken on the sense of, it's not okay to be okay. That there's this bit of jockeying that seems to happen of us pointing to, here's all the reasons why I am suffering. Here's all the reason why things are hard. Here's all the things that are going on in my life that's not okay. That our interactions with each other is almost exclusively focused on what's wrong in this world, what's wrong for us, what is not okay. Now let me show my work on this. What is your default response when someone asks you, how are you doing? Or how was this past week? The response that I hear almost from everybody is, man, things are just so busy right now. This is just a really hard week. Now, I'm sure they are, and I'm not denying that things are hard. But I think we gave that answer last week, didn't we? And the week before, and the week before, and the week before. Now, my concern is that if this is our response, almost exclusively rushing to go to who's the most busy, who's got it worse, well, I'm not denying that things are hard, that things are busy. If one of the few times that we get to genuinely be introspective, how are you doing? When we get to pause and think about what's going on in my soul, in my life right now, and all it is, always going back to the things that are wrong, what's hard, what's difficult, well, that becomes a pattern. That becomes a habit. What is it then that we're doing to our hearts? Or let me show a different example. For parenting groups for a long time, it was you needed to act like your child was a perfect little bundle of joy every single moment of your life. And I'm glad that we're not there anymore. I'm glad that we're able to talk about how parenting is hard and to share challenges. It's only then that we get to help each other in that. If you're acting like everything's fine, I'm not going to give you advice. It's only when we share what is genuinely going on that we get to be a help to each other. It's good that we're past that spot anymore. But again, it feels like the language has gone beyond that. Now, terminology for kids is calling them monsters or pumas or creatures or something that robs us of something else. And if that's our language, if that's what we're doing is just going straight to the difficulty or even exclusively the difficulty of it, how is that training our hearts? Our habits, our patterns, they're influential. What we revert to is what we will always revert to when we're on autopilot or when we're just trying to make it through something. The things that we repeat, what we say, begins to shape what we believe, and that's what we train ourselves to know. Think about it this way. Your commute that you have is something you're doing every day, whether you're going to school or work or someplace that you just go regularly. You ever have those moments where you remember getting into the car, and then next thing you know, you're pulling into the parking lot or the driveway, and you're not really sure what happened in between. It's a little bit scary, but then there's also that bit of like, man, how cool is it that I was able to do this without even actively thinking about it? And we're able to do that because we do it every day, or we do it over and over again. We've trained ourselves for it. When we're on autopilot, we just go through the motions that we're used to setting for ourselves. What my concern is, if our knee-jerk reaction is exclusively going to the difficulty of it all, again, not ignoring that things are hard and can be hard, not saying you have to just pretend things are fine when you're here, let's not go back to that place. But if all we do is find the reasons to say something is wrong, all the reasons, all we're doing is missing the reasons that we have to have joy. We're training ourselves to only see the things that are not okay, and that will make gratitude all the more difficult going forward. And from that, not exclusively the reason, but from that, we see people eject from marriages, or they quit friendships, or they leave a job, or they hop from church to church to church. Because all we're doing is just only reminding ourselves of the reasons we have to not be grateful. Now, there's good reasons to leave all those things. I'm not saying otherwise. But are we also reminding ourselves of the good reasons we have to stay? Do we miss the genuine good that's going on around us, knowing there is a God who always has worked, is working, and will always work? So he's always providing us with reasons for gratitude, always providing us with good, genuine good around us. So there will always be a reason to thank him. But we've just not allowed ourselves to recognize that. That hasn't been our practice. We haven't trained ourselves in this way. See, we could be like Paul, regardless of the circumstances around us, even if they are difficult. And Paul was going through horrific circumstances, and yet he's able to say, I thank my God. Not because he's pretending. He's acknowledging the hardship of it. Next week, we're going to talk even more so about what Paul is going through is so difficult right now. But he can genuinely believe that there is good in the midst of it. Not because he's thinking on the bright side. And not because he's just gritting and bearing it. He can genuinely say, I thank God, because he's been training his heart for gratitude through remembrance, through prayer, through focusing on God's character, and that allows him to see genuine good in an otherwise difficult situation. Let me put some skin on this. How much more difficult is it for me to remember the delight of parenting Everett when all that I do is recall the times that hurt? When the moments that I grab onto, the moments that I replay are the times that have not filled me with joy. The times that he says, go away so mama can come. Or when he wakes me up during the night and I'm running on fumes, I'm exhausted. And yet he somehow still needs things the next morning. Like, no, this is my time. When I replay these times that are hard, if those are the memories that I grab to, then all I'm going to have is a perspective to where he doesn't bring me joy. And what I do is I miss the fact that he was prayed over for 7 years to even be here, let alone all the delight and the happiness that he brings. And it's not pitting memories against each other, but it's I'm only allowing myself to see one side of him. I'm only allowing myself to see half of the equation. It doesn't remove the hurt or the struggle of it. But when we recall all the good and the joy that God is doing, even in those times, that allows us to make it through the struggle. That allows us to recognize all the reasons we have to be grateful because he's here. Or how much more difficult is it to be a good husband to Emily when I'm coming home just beat up and shredded from things at church or in the world or just going on with me personally, and she has the audacity to have had a bad day too. And I go to it, no, this is my time. I get to be the focus here. And if it's just replaying things that I think are slights or things not going the way I thought it would, I would miss the fact that we've been able to be each other's biggest help for our lives. Or in a week where you could ask me, hey, how are things going? And I say, it's just so busy right now. And I think I could play the game with her. I think I could show that this week was busy. It's prepping for this message, prepping for a wedding this weekend, had the opportunity to get to teach in student ministries on Wednesday. So there's just a lot that gets scheduled into a week. But then a phone call comes in or an email, and it just, what is it now? Just seeing these things as burdens, or that's just not going to fit into my schedule. And miss the fact that God has called me to a place and equipped me so much more beyond what I can imagine to do the work that he's called me to. The busyness does not just become a barrier to anything that's good, but to recognize that he's doing good even in the midst of it. You see, whatever it might be, it's so easy to fill our heads with all that's not okay. And we will always find more and more things that are not okay this side of the new heavens and the new earth. And what has to be for at least the 100th time, I am not denying those things. I'm not saying pretend they're not there. I'm not saying just think on the bright side, have the power of positivity. What I'm saying is that there is a God who breaks through even now the things that are not okay. And as we train our hearts and our minds and our beings to see the reasons that we have to thank God through remembering him, remembering what he's doing in others, and through prayer, that is what enables us to be like Paul and have genuine gratitude, even in genuine difficulty. So here is my challenge for us this week. Paul is grateful for what God has done, is doing, and will do. Paul is so full of joy because of what he sees God doing in the lives of others. How can we practice that exact same thing? See, for me, this is something I really struggle with I tend to gravitate towards those difficult times. Those tend to be the moments I play over and over again. As you're probably further along than I am, I had to go as rudimentary as possible. In the preparation for this week, I put a notebook by my bed, and before I fall asleep, I go through these four categories that Paul was gratitude for. For what God has done, is doing, will do, and for others. I put a grid, and before I fell asleep, I tried to remember what he did to remind himself of his gratitude, remember something that God had done. This isn't Thanksgiving, where you know your time is coming and you have to come up with something on the spot of why you're thankful for. You just have to do it because it's being put upon you. No, I'm saying Paul's example for us is we are so easily missing what is genuinely happening around us. We need these times to recall the good that is happening, not to create some false memory, but to see what is true, to see what's real, to find reality around us. So as I try to come up with something, it's not to fake it till I make it, but to see that this is really there, that it's too easy for me to miss it, to miss the reasons God gives me to be thankful. And without that, I would just continue to wallow. Without that, we would continue to miss the goodness that he is doing, and he always is doing good. Without it, we would always fall short of who we are to be, who this church is to be. We would miss out on the greatest gift that we have to make it through this life. So my challenge for you is to find time this week, maybe once a day if we're so bold, or sometime over the next 7 days, even if it's just this afternoon, to think through these categories, to remind ourselves God is doing good. And without remembering, without pausing, it would be far too easy to miss that. And we would miss the certainty that we have that he is always working. The certainty that we have that his character means that he will give us endless reasons that we could be grateful. The certainty that we have as well to be able to say in all things, in all circumstances, at all times, I thank my God. Let me pray for us.